Hey everybody, welcome to Open Infrastructure Orbit, a whole assembly of assemblies dedicated to, you guessed it, open infrastructure. So I'm very happy we're speaking now about, yeah, maybe a sister community or a very, dear community also for everybody who's engaged in open infrastructure and wireless networks in the Hamnet amateur radio network. And we're learning more about everything that has to do with the infrastructure that's powering this. So I'm very happy to give you the floor. And if you have any questions, of course, you can post them on Twitter using the OIO stage hashtag. And in case you're not here, but hello in the stream, you also can use the IRC. And you also can, if you're just wanting to post some comments on it and chat with each other, that's of course always possible. And in any case, if you have any questions afterwards, we have some time here for Q&A. And now I'm very happy to introduce you to Lars Rokita, who will speak about Hamnet and who has all your attention now. Thank you.
Thank you for coming today. Lots more people than I expected. I'm not the most expert in the case of Hamnet, but I think it's far too large, far too much important Congress here to not speak about it. So I made a little talk on English, and later tomorrow I have a more detailed talk about a specific kind of Hamnet on a specific band, more in depth. So this is more like an overview, and we can put a little bit depth in the questions. So first, the question is, what is Hamnet? And Hamnet stands for High-Speed Amateur Radio Multimedia Network. A little bit complicated. Sometimes people call it a mesh network, and it's mainly used on three bands. The most common used band is the 6-centimeter band, or also known as the 5 gigahertz band. And as we can see down there, we have the two mostly known 5 gigahertz and 2.4 gigahertz bands. And the 5 gigahertz bands, it's really nice overlapping with the commercial available bands for VLAN and Wi-Fi and ISM. And on the 13 centimeter bands, we have more like our own frequencies. And there's also nice 9 centimeter. It's a little bit more special, the band. The hardware is a little bit more expensive, but it also has a benefit. It's not that much use, so it's a lot less noisy and has its own beneficial. And we also can see we are a little bit limited by law, so we have a limitation on the bandwidth. And now it comes to the point independent from the internet. It's not really independent because at the state we are in, at the Hamnet now, it's lots of islands and the islands needs to be connected. And what do we use to connect them? It's VPN tunnels. So we are still using kind of the internet, but the traffic isn't routed to the internet because there's a general law that amateur radio can't transmit data for third parties. So only amateur radio can use this net, because if it wasn't the kind, all the ISPs and other companies would get mad that we can use this frequency for our stuff and use them on their own terms, and we pay a lot of money for the frequencies, and we don't want to play this game. Play the game of the ISPs, so we have our own net to play around with. And here's a little bit of history. All of the amateur radio networks started in the 80s with a so-called packet radio network, and it was real slow, around 1.2K baud. It's not that fast. After some time, was 9.6, but it's also not that fast. And in 2005, in Austria, there was made first test on 2.4 gigahertz. and a little bit time took its place when the name Hemnet was established. And around 2010, it's got a little bit more international out of Austria. Germany was in 2009, so it's a little bit spreading, and it's going on. And now a little bit about routing. The routing is mostly BGP, but now it's the interesting part. We are having our own IP range. It's shrunk a little bit. But in Germany, for example, we have the 44.148/15, so it's around 131k of IP addresses. If we compare to, we are around 60,000 amateur radio guys in Germany, so everybody gets two IP addresses. It's kind of comfortable to have a lot of IPv4 addresses. So IP addresses aren't the problem, and IPv6 isn't that kind of theme in the community yet. The more of the problem is with the AS routing. The 16-bit AS are kind of limited, and so we get every region get one of the AS addresses. It's listed down below. So we have a large region that gets a 16-bit AS address, and that's split in up to 100 local AS cells with 32-bit addresses, because the 16-bit private AS addresses are quite limited. And so it's a little game of split up, until we reach the user access point from the backbone area, and where we use subnets of around 20 IPs directly. Here's a little bit of the map. This screenshot was taken, I think, 5 days ago, and where you can see a large red area in the Netherlands, where I had a little bit of problem. So the Netherlands were disconnected. Now they are back up again. But we can see the net is quite spreading, and we see also one problem. Here in Leipzig, we have a little bit of a hole, and we need to work on it to get this hole closed so we can connect Berlin to the rest of the net, so Berlin doesn't have to use a VPN anymore. It's quite large, but it's still growing, and I'm holding this talk in English because if you look at the map, mostly it's German-speaking countries, so Germans mostly know of it. Now it's about the IP distribution. We have I talked about it, but the IP range shrunk. The amateur radio community had the whole .44 block /8, but with the recent shortages of IPv4 addresses, the owner of these IP addresses took up the cause and thought, if we sell some of them, we can get quite a lot of money. So we sold the /10 area, it's 1/4 of all the addresses, and got a lot of money from it. Now it's up to them how they use that money. I think we sold it to Amazon. So as the German amateur radio community uses IP addresses now in this area, we have to reallocate them to a new area. But it's not that kind of time critical, because these IP addresses aren't routed to the normal internet, so it's kind of independent. It's not that nice to use these IP addresses twice in the internet, one in the private network that isn't really routed to the internet and one from Amazon. And from normal IP distribution point of overview, we have an area like and state in the country or something like that, or maybe a big city, and these areas mostly get 1,000 addresses for the users and 500 addresses for the backbone. And every node, if it's a normal node, we have kind of really big nodes where we use lots of more capacity, normally gets around 16 user IP addresses, 4 for the backbone, so we can have 4 links. and some IP for local services like RASP, some data aggregation and something like that. So that's the normal thing to address the IP distribution. The IP distribution is done in its own way. So we have a German amateur radio IP organization who does all that kind of stuff. And now it's to the link planning. What's the longest link in the Hemnet? It's 216 kilometers at 5.7 gigahertz. It's quite nice, it's working, but it has a little problem. And the problem is, if we look here, that's the data of the RSI, and if we look down here, we can see the uptime. Now the uptime isn't showing that kind of large, but it's only going up to 2 days, because ever so often it starts raining, and at 200 kilometers at 5 gigahertz, rain is enough to keep it down, but this link is kind of special. Normal link is around 50 kilometers long. It's much more easier to find link paths wet short, because if you go longer and longer, we know Earth isn't kind of that flat, so it matters to find high elevation points to connect. Now for a quick look into the hardware, most of the times we use commercial hardware with old firmware before the US laws change, or with alternative firmware, because the US laws nowadays dictates that you can't change frequencies out of band, and that's what we kind of do with it. And for the links, we use high-gain directional antennas like dishes, or here we have multiple antennas in that kind of plane. And for user access, we use more like sector antennas or omnidirectional antennas. Down there, we can see a user access coverage map. It's of Vienna, and where you can see how quickly mountains become a quite important thing to consider. In the city, even more high building. If you're living in a building and are not on the top, it's quite of difficult. But that's a point I will address later. Here we can see a standard build-up. We have a router, mostly PoE, so we can get quite easy access on the top of the roof with short cable lengths, because at 5.7 gigahertz, every meter of cable counts, every meter losses power. So it's important to keep short cable lengths. And prices, these prices are a little bit older, have dropped a little bit. But hardware cost is not the problem. We have some other annoying stuff. In Germany, as amateur radio, we have to obey the amateur radio law, and every link station, it's operated automatically. So it needs to have its own license. If I have a station on my home, that's not matters much. But if I have a link station sitting up on top of a tower, connecting to other links, it's counts as an automated station, and it needs a special permit. And as the government is, if we want something from the government wants something from us, and that's cash. The other thing is we have a 10 megahertz maximal bandwidth per link if we use the amateur radio frequencies. That's the way around it. Just use two links or three links, but needs its own hardware, so it's a little bit annoying. And the last thing is, as amateur radio is open speech, so it's no general encryption allowed. It's you can encrypt for setting up links, for configuring files and something, but we have no transport encryption, so everybody can hear what you're doing over it. But it's also counting into the direction it's experimenting, and not an replacement for internet. You don't want to do bank work over it. You shouldn't even be able to do it, because the bank aren't amateur radio guys, so you shouldn't be able to talk to them. And the last big problem is mountains are hard to move. If you want to make a link and mountain or a building is in the way, it's hard to get around it. And even harder is to get access to a high tower to get the permit to put some stuff up there. here are some example links, how a link in the Hemnet looks like. Sometimes simple IP addresses is used, and other times you see the AMPR, it stands for Amateur Packet Radio. It's kind of old kind of link. And as the third example, we can see a routing aid in it, and the amateur radio network has all of its own stuff, own DNS, here's its own web search, and there's lots of possibilities to use this network. And I thought it was be kind of quick put into this theme, so we can do a little bit more of questions and answers to get more to the points of interest you have. So microphone turnaround, or what's the deal?
Yeah, I have a microphone here. So if you have a question, you can come to me or I give it to you.
So if you don't have encryption, can you have authentication?
Yeah, that's one thing to work about, how to make a secure authentication, that's the person who talks to you is really the person you're speaking with. It's an area we are working on to get this kind of right way. I mean, it's really easy to get an authentication kind of the wrong way, just use a tag or something, but it's kind of easy to replicate it from another person. So that's one area we are quite working on to get it done right. So nobody can easily replicate the authentication.
So if I may make a follow-up, what's the standard protocol that you use for shell access? Do you just use Telnet then?
It's normal Telnet. It's just its own address space. So it's normal Telnet. It's normal. It's like the normal internet, normal DNS, and all that stuff. I mean, I'm not that kind of an routing guy. I'm more like the hardware and link setup. But we have sitting down there in the chaos wave. So if you have more questions, I can do a little bit of dig up and hope to help you out.
So yeah, also about encryption, I feel like it's a bit subjective. I mean, you said no general encryption, but so it means, for example, I cannot expose a website using HTTPS, I guess?
It's that not many sites are allowed to use HTTPS, because that's kind of is point of encryption, so only the config sites of your link hardware is allowed to use HTTPS,
okay.
And all the other sites aren't just using normal HTTP.
But then, right, it's a content network, so I can put content there. I can encrypt it in a way that nobody knows about it. How can they know it's encrypted?
Yeah, you can always, I think, misuse the system. But as the general, I can also take my normal amateur radio microphone and put some encrypted data link over it. You can do it, but you aren't supposed to do it. And okay. That's the spirit of amateur radio.
Okay, thank you. One more question here.
Hi, I was just wondering if you have much or any communication with the AmperNet people. They basically, as far as I hear it, just sold off your addresses without telling you anything. Has there been any better relationship there? Are you going to get any money from them?
Yeah, it's quite an interesting question. Yeah, where I talked to us before, but we will be sold the addresses. We are getting new addresses, so it's one-to-one replacement, more like. So our /15 in the area of sold IP addresses now moved to a new area. And on the other hand, the money distribution thing, I think it's still in the works, so nobody knows what we're going to do with it. I'm hoping we do the right things to fund the network, like also the AIDE network in the US, maybe link them up together to get an even bigger network, or do something really good with it. But I'm not the one to tell them how to do it, and only hope we do the right thing. And It's easy to screw up with lots of monies. I think it's around 60 to 100 million in the talks, but I'm not sure how much that really was.
So we're hackers here, we're like abusing things. So what's the enforcement on the you shouldn't encrypt? Because the obvious answer is either the microphone hack that you just proposed, or the steganography are hiding content encrypted in images. Like, there is many ways to do it. Who's going to enforce it, and what's the possible legal challenges here, do you know?
The more easy way is from the backbone side of things. So to, if after a long time you see we're doing some strange stuff, you can kind of fence them out, so try to not let them into the network. I mean, the areas where we're getting in, it's limited points of user access, and most likely you know from every direction the people come and can see, oh, this new address. Normally, you know, if you have an user access point, it's around 10 guys per access point at the moment, so you really know the guys who are doing on it, and kind of can ban them. But I mean, you can get a new MAC address and try again. I mean, as always, the guys who want to mess around with some stuff, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes even it's brought to court, and we are sued to misuse the frequencies. We hope we don't have to do that stuff because it's just annoying. So, I mean, just don't stretch the band too far. I mean, if you play around with it for some time, little time, it's okay, but don't stretch it too far so you damage all the system, trying to jam all the people or something like that. It's quite easy trackable, and you can see from where they're coming and hunt them down. It's a lot of work, but it's doable, and when it gets to the court, to the money, it's not that good thing.
Okay, we have a question here in the back.
Yeah. Hi. You have said that, of course, access to high buildings is quite essential. So do you have any tips convincing those people who can give you those access that they want to give you the access?
The most, the way which gets the most responses is if you can talk to them. It's like emergency network. All the stuff is quite low power. You can put up a 50-watt solar cell and around 1 kilowatt-hour battery, and the system will run kind of forever without no external power. And so you can talk it to the government or the other people, but it's an emergency network. It will work when everything else fails. I mean, in Germany, I think a normal cell tower fails after 10 to 30 hours of no power. And that's one pitch to put up the Hemnet, and the other pitches at university or other buildings, that's kind of science experimenting with it and doing that kind of stuff.
Great, thanks a lot. I'm now coming up with something sweet, because we have a little presence for all the speakers on stage. Thank you again. Do you want some chocolate or some mate?
I think I will need the mate more. We will be at the Chaos Wave, and I have to work on the next talk. It's not finished yet, so it's about Hemnet on 70 centimeters. That's the easy access, because 70 centimeters gets through the buildings, and it's not blocked on site. And what's the next talk? And we have hardware to play around with.
Great. So everybody meets you at Chaos Welle.
Yep.
And thank you all for coming for this talk. It's really interesting. Thanks again. Your applause.